For my podcast, I chose to interview my dad about crossing boundaries in his job as a teacher. My dad is an intellectual heritage professor at Temple University and has a PhD in English literature. Here is what I recorded.
Familiar with everyone else. At the beginning of the semester, in the first class, I stand at a lectern or sit behind a desk. I rove up and down the classroom. There's usually a center aisle that goes from front to back. And I'm there next to them when they're talking. And I keep the tone brisk and as entertaining as possible.
Laid back kind of talking to your students?
When there's an opportunity for a quick joke.
You don't hesitate to throw it in there?
No. And if they're laughing, if they're feeling engaged enough that the prospect of speaking in front of their fellow students doesn't intimidate them at all. That's what gets the material across.
You try to get your students like warm up to not only you, but to each other.
Exactly.
So they don't feel like not so much shy, but like timid, I guess you could say.
A lot of students feel intimidated by the prospect of speaking up in front of others.
Maybe just college in general, you know, that change.
It's more females than males.
Yeah.
I could see why. In grade school and high school, unless they've gone to a single-sex school, we're apt to speak up first, and not always with a valuable contribution. They just speak.
Mm-hmm.
Girls, I think some of them get used to deferring to that. You know, that's outmoded, it's sexist, it's not right.
So
in college, I want that...
You want that trend to be broken?
Completely.
Yeah.
What they're learning in my class, aside from the content, what they're learning in terms of speaking and writing, because writing is so important.
In every aspect.
These are very marketable skills.
Mm-hmm.
Even if the content of the course has nothing to do with their career. In many cases, their major has nothing to do with what job they end up with. But their speaking and writing skills. In an information-based economy, those skills...
Crucial.
Yeah. And are marketable.
A few more questions down the line, I decided to ask my dad on what criteria does he usually grade essays on, and what kind of feedback does he give to his students on each essay.
It's just covered with comments.
Red.
No, I never use red. Never. Because that, I think, would scare them. They would think that every comment is negative, and it's far from it. You know, I give them as much encouragement as I can. I just... have a sort of conversation with them, that they have a good idea that they've raised but not developed. Tell them that and offer them some more information to develop it with. I feel I'm serious about their work as they are. And you know, they're grateful for it. And I didn't want them to think that my comments were necessarily negative. That I have a lot to say about their paper. In addition to all my marginal comments at the end, I will give them summary comments that sometimes run on for pages.
Yeah.
Now, if somebody's a fine writer, every semester you'll get a few students who can write. And I push them. I praise them. They have a gift.
Mm-hmm.
excellent, they're producing excellent work. They can always get better. I try to make them understand that for a good writer, every word is a significant, that they need to be conscious of the rhythm their sentences, the music of their sentences, the sounds that come through. I mean, I'm not by any means encouraging them to write sentences.
The final question that I posed to my dad is, what does he think gives him the biggest sense of accomplishment in teaching, and how does he involve his students?
School for Poets, and one of her poems, which don't have titles, they're just generally known by the first line. She's speaking to one of her students, and in this she's consoling that student because another student that the one she's consoling loved is taking the job as a tutor hundreds of miles away. And Sappho tells her in the poem that they share a bond that can't be broken by time or distance. And just before the last stanza, there's a shortened stanza that doesn't carry on the thread of the story, so it seems it's just purely descriptive. And the curious thing is that there's a huge amount of alliteration, assonance, consonants, every type of alliteration in the words in these lines. And you realize the reason these lines are there is for the sound of them to enact a bond. These words create a web of sound that's so strong and so coherent that it just enacts the bond that Sappho was talking about to her student. And students realize that in literature, you can create meaning with more than just the words and their defined meaning.
Mm-hmm.
Just by pure sound. Like this, seeing students' jaws drop sometimes, or just their eyes light up when they realize that they've discovered a new way to understand literature, and they've gained a whole new realization of what